Welcome back, sir.
Hey, what's up?
Good to see you again. I just saw you at Bizzler.
What was that like?
2.5.
A month ago? 2 months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we were in Dominican, and then I literally went on a trip right after.
We got back like the
20th. And I have the scars to prove it.
That's right. That was crazy. Bro, is Bizzler 2.5 like the number of summers you sold? Look at that.
It's 2.75. Thank you.
Oh, shit. That's funny. It's good to have you back. Good to have you back. Good to have you back. If you guys don't know, well, let me tell people who we're talking to right now. So we are on the air with Anthony Conray, all the way from Oklahoma City. And Anthony sold for 2.75 summers.
Yes.
Is the official count.
Get that last 0.25.
That's right. With the Dynasty organization from 2017 to 2019, went to Oklahoma University and originally is from Tulsa. Last time he saw us, he was doing a couple different things, but currently he's been up to a few things since the last time you were here, 3 years ago. And we are working for Boeing now, which is really cool. I'm excited to hear. I mean, we heard a little bit about it at Bizzler, but there it is. There's the hat.
There it is.
We talked about it at Bizzler a little bit, but I was like, wait, just come back on the podcast and tell me about it because it sounded really cool what you're up to. So I'm excited to hear about it. You were also in a cult. We'll get to that.
Well, not. I loved it.
Oh, you left a cult.
I was at the time of the last time I was on the podcast. I was in a cult, very much.
You were in the cult, and then you
another left one.
A different cult. Yeah.
Yes.
Not Southwestern, a different cult. Actually, fun fact, on this same day that we were recording right now, I recorded with your mom this morning, who also sold books, and she was awesome. Your mom's cool. So I was like, oh, sweet, two Conrays in one day. Lucky man that I am. So before we jump in, a couple of announcements for people. Guys, check out our Patreon. We're trying to get away from advertisements or as many advertisements, make them a little shorter for y'all. But in order for that, we need help. We need help to start keep the lights on. So go to our Patreon and support us for $3 a month. You get no perks, just a good butterflies for helping us. You can also do $5 a month, which is the same thing, no perks, but you get to say that you donated five instead of three, which, you know, well, just think of it as units. It's cooler if you have more units. And then there is a $15 level, and you get to do a bunch of perks included in that. So we'll let you know who's coming up on the show, and you can ask some questions, and we can submit questions for that and a bunch of other stuff we're still working out. But please go over there and check that out. Also, big shout out to Julio Hernandez and Alex Black with Enlight Energy. They are our oldest sponsor here on the podcast and are currently expanding to pretty much any market in the US that is solar is sold. So if you guys want to get into the solar industry as a career or maybe just a part-time thing, go check them out. I worked with them for a year and a half and it was really, really good money and a really awesome company to work for. They are bumping it up and it's pretty cool to see that we just had an episode with Julio. They're on the Inc. 5000, which is really sweet. They were in like the top, I think 50% or something of that, even that list, which is pretty amazing. So go check them out. But anyway, Anthony, welcome back, sir. We're going to start out with a different order. Oh, yeah. Ask me.
So if you're saying the donations like the units, are you your donation?
You are your donation. That's right.
Got exactly. It.
You're right. You are your donation. So that's why you put a $5 level just so you can be like, I'm better than the $3 level people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
$10.
Okay. We'll let them know too. When you join at $5, we're like, hey, thanks for, you know, John Doe, or thanks to Lee McCroskey for joining for $5. You are way cooler than all the people at the $3 level. We'll let the people know. We'll let them know.
Please. Okay, yeah. Cool. Just want to clarify. Yeah.
And by the way, Lee McCroskey has not donated yet. So, you know, if you see him, be like, dude, why not? We'll just call him out right now in the air for no reason. Thank you for asking though. I appreciate that. All right, man, we're going to start this in a different way. We're going to start with rapid fire questions because we're probably going to talk about some of your Southwestern stuff. Obviously there's a couple of stories from there that we're going to retell, but if you guys want to go check out like a more complete version of Anthony's story, getting into Southwestern and stuff, you can go check out his first episode. We'll kind of go through some of the major highlights of it in this one, but, for sure go check out that episode. It's fun.
Which episode was it, Andres?
Number 10. Episode number 10. You can just type in Anthony Conroy ponytails and it'll come up. It'll be number 10. You can check that out for sure. All right, man. I got some rapid fire questions for you from your 2.75 summer. So what was your favorite territory that you sold in?
Oh, my gosh, Michigan.
Michigan? Really?
Specifically, so my second summer I sold in both the Vildes and Mattawan. This is weird because it's backwards. And then Portage, Michigan. Portage was great. Mattawan was horrible. So Portage, Michigan was – and Michigan in the summer is just like – it's
nice,
amazing, you know. It's not hot. And it's like lying until like 9:30 at night, so you're fine. Yeah, no, that was a really good summer. And I sold a lot of units.
Love that. Oh, am I hearing background noise? I don't know.
Yeah, that's Tyson.
There we go. Be like, hey, Tyson, keep it down, bro. We're recording a podcast. Sounds like
he has someone over too.
So. Oh, boy. Okay. Ooh, that might get loud.
Give me a second.
Yeah, 1 sec. Boom. Okay, we're back. Thanks for that, by the way. Okay, if it gets loud again, we might have to pause it again and then just try this a different time or something.
That's no problem.
Okay. Now, so Michigan, favorite territory. Okay, favorite kind of turf. Like, did you
The
country big brick. Did you like?
Well, so that's a thing. Like, I was the big brick person. Like, I would knock on doors like way taller than me, and like I loved it. I was really good at selling technically to like really rich people. It was awesome until my third summer when they put me in the most expensive territory in the US and Loudoun County, and I did horribly and all that, but we'll talk about why I did horribly later.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was definitely a big brick boy.
Hell yeah. So. Big fan of big brick.
Hell yeah. And specifically, of course there's like big bricks, but I actually my favorite that's like my heart. I love these. It's just kind of cookie cutter neighborhoods.
Really?
I love those ones so much.
Wow, that is a unique answer. I don't know that many people. I did not like cookie cutter. I would get lost even with pre-approach. So I'd be like, what the hell? This is house, it's the same house. Ugh, it's so confusing. Okay, favorite advanced sales tape.
Say it again?
Favorite advanced sales tape.
Advanced sales tip?
Tape, like a recording. Like, you know those CDs that you would play? Oh, you don't? I don't know
if
you
have CDs. Oh, yeah. Okay, I like the Mort one.
The Mort one. Everybody loves the Mort one. They like that one.
Okay. The Mort one. I don't remember those.
Yeah, dude.
I've never actually listened to anything when I was driving around because I was just focused and then I wouldn't actually listen to advanced sales or anything. Though I do remember listening to what else? Sorry, I just blanked.
It's all good. There's like the Bill Zizzy. There's like the Kevin Johnson one. Mark Rao had a good one. There's so many legendary ones.
Yeah,
there's legendary ones. All right. Favorite HQ?
You know, that was fun. So in Michigan as well. So Mandy. So Mandy, I actually did not have an HQ when we started selling that summer. We did technically. So here's how it went is we had one set up before we got to Michigan. I get there. It's like an apartment we're going to have to pay $600 a month for. I'm like... No, not doing this. So we actually stayed like one day with an alumni before we started selling. But she, of course, she couldn't like sustain us the entire time because her kids were like teenagers, stuff like that. So I was like on the book field, like trying to figure out, oh my gosh, I'm stressed because it's my responsibility as the student leader to find the HQ. So I'm just going around selling. And then I had like one customer, and then I still remember Mandy. She was my first customer. I think
your first customer was your HQ.
Yeah, and then I just think like, after we finished up, I'm just like, hey, so another question. We're looking for
you know how you like, just handed me $700? Well, also.
Right. So and she's like, well, we have a spare room downstairs. And you know, she did a little background check on us, very subtle. And we ended up staying with her. And she was fantastic, you know. She would they'd often like cook dinner and then just have leftovers for us every night, and then she ended up hosting for like one or two more summers after us, and she loved the experience. And yeah, no, she made it. I literally just talked with her a second ago because
I was gonna say, do you still stay in touch with her? Because
kind of, not really, but I had to reach out to her because of my clearance. It was like I have to like put location some to verify that I was selling in the summer so that the government could be like, hey, they actually do this or not. So Mandy's like, I got you, I get it, I had clearance once too.
Yeah, my buddy got clearance, and that's I was under the contacts as well. We'll get into that. That's an interesting thing that's happened to you that you're doing.
Oh yes,
that's wild. Also, we're thinking about doing an episode with like a panel of former HQ hosts and asking them questions about the experience to see what their life was like. You know, and it'd be fun if it's people who did not sell, or like people like, for example, Mandy, where like you knocked on her door and she was like, okay, I'll let you in my house. So, okay. Favorite breakfast spot.
I literally don't even remember my breakfast spots from my second and third summer. What the heck? My first summer was great. It was just Waffle House.
Classic. We've been doing a lot of Waffle House lately, and it's
remember on my second summer.
It's all good. Waffle House, can't go wrong. Favorite follow day that you remember?
Oh dear. I loved mine when I followed Jake Osau. He's such good.
People have said Jake Osau, and I can't imagine how
he actually has like a notebook that you like put what you learn and like your notes and things like that. I'm like, why does he get to keep the notebook that we're making notes about? Like, we should be keeping that, you know. But he's very fun follow. When I was attempting to learn how to sell in the country, that I never did that. I never got to go to the country. He was just a very fun follow. I got to follow a lot of people that summer too. So
he's the man. Favorite off schedule story?
I was never off schedule.
All right. Right.
I was never off schedule. The only time I was not off schedule until my third summer. It was like a fun off schedule thing. It was like, I can't continue. I'm very annoyed.
Right. Yeah, because
of all the shit I was going through.
Yeah. Your ponytail from last time was wild.
Yeah, like it was like my second or third week that summer.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah, no, I was like never on schedule.
Nothing fun. Favorite sales day? And it could be because you had the most units, or it was just like a
crazy probably day. That would be my first Saturday from my second summer, whenever I had 10 customers and got a magic number that day, which was very surprising. A magic number is basically the person who sells the most units in the company. And I got that somehow, crazily. I technically did lie and cheat a little bit. So I told Val because I got, because my goal was my second summer. My first summer was like super, I was dropping bombs on moms. I would just get like very few customers, but sell these huge packages. My second summer, my goal was to have more customers. And so I did that, and I was like, okay, this is rolling, you know. And I had like a 350 day or something like that, which is pretty good for like a Saturday, you know. That's I think it was a holiday. 300 or 400, I don't know. But it's kind of crazy that you can have that much and not hit PC, because I had so like few units going into that day. Like I was sitting on like 150, 200 on that Saturday. So I was trying to like turn it out, and I did like 10 customers in the day. The reason I say I kind of cheated one of those customers, it was like kind of a weak order, and I kind of like fudged. I was like, I'll kind of like give you $20 just for the units. And they did, so I confessed around. He's like, don't do it again.
Weak customer. Hey, Mrs. Jones, you're weak. This is why.
They did not come through.
Let me tell you why you're weak. All the other moms paid me half, but you didn't, which makes you, on paper, I have to write weak next to your name. Just so you know. Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh man. And then the last question is, most famous person you met, if anybody?
So I actually met somebody who I did sell to him actually my second summer. I was running for state representative, I think. He lost his election because the other guy who I did actually see while I was on the book field, who was going door to door, kind of advocating for himself. He was like a longtime incumbent. I think it was a state representative. I guess I didn't talk to him, but I saw him go door to door. But the other guy I sold to, his family sold like the high school. I think that's just math. So
pretty sweet.
I was like following his election and he lost, but whatever. And I remember the mom, she was telling me, because she's like, she works at a university. She's like, this internship thing would never fly at my university. I'm like, sorry.
Seems like a scam.
Probably.
Was it a cult? Was it a cult in your mind? Were we in a cult? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You've been in an actual cult.
I have.
Do you think Southwestern?
I call my early 20s my cult era. But Southwestern is absolutely a cult. And it's like it's kind of one of the good cults, if you want to say that. So it's sure. Like we all know it's a cult. We joke about it because we're like, yeah, no, it's yeah, I mean, you're getting good stuff from it and like we're learning things, so it's fine. It's just like crazy people want to do it. So
everybody drinks Kool-Aid, just depends on the flavor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know.
Have you seen a sports fan? Holy shit, that's a cult. Okay. Dang. All right, so tell me, okay, let's just jump into some of these highlights. Tell me about when you got a stroke.
A stroke?
Yeah.
We were like a stroke.
Well, like in the first episode, I went back and re-listened to it, and you were like having seizures and stuff, weren't you? In the
No seizures.
What was it then?
Like on the book field or
yeah.
Like after? Okay, so what was happening? I was having what's called transient ischemic episodes, which is okay. Just little
You did not call them that in your last episode, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, no.
I never had a seizure.
You said it was a stroke, I think, or mini stroke or something.
Or mini strokes.
And you went to the hospital and the doctor was like, yo, this is
so,
not okay.
So at the time I was dating David and his dad is a psychiatrist. I did a full psychiatric evaluation with him the spring before because I'm like, I'm depressed. Something's wrong because I was acting very much out of character. Like I failed my first class ever and like got all B's and like I'm a straight A kid, you know. And then yeah, so that summer I couldn't figure out what happened and I was having like mini strokes. People were saying that I was drunk going door to door and I'm like, why are they saying this? I'm fine, you know. Of course I had the stroke and that's why his dad told me later that probably was having TIAs, like the mini strokes is probably what it was.
Okay, so yeah, it was a stroke. I'm like you said not a stroke. I'm like, isn't that what you said the last time? That's what I heard. Okay.
No, yeah, a stroke, not seizures.
I know, but then I say like whatever. Okay, so mini strokes. So how did that happen? Like, what was it? Was it stress induced? Like
I don't know.
You never like found out?
No, they just called it cryptogenic, which means they don't know. Which probably means they do know. They just don't want to put their stamp on it because they'll get sued medically if they're wrong. You know.
Right. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, all that means is I'm at a high risk of having another one, and I don't know what caused it. So, but that being said, in the hospital, they found that I was born with a PFO. Thanks, Mom. Go watch her episode. a PFO is like a small hole in your heart, mm-hmm. And like the vast majority of people like live and die for like random, like normal reasons who are born with a PFO and like no issues. I'm one of the few that actually did have issues possibly from it. So it's the theory is that like a clot formed in my leg, passed up through the heart, and then because the hole is passed right through to the brain. So that's what I forgot, you know.
Yeah. I've had also heart issues, as you know. That's why I have the big old scar on my chest. But yeah, I get it.
I have scars now from the
Dominican. Wild.
From Bizzler. Anyway,
from Bizzler. Know? Scars from Bizzler. So wild, dude. Okay. All right. Now I need to know. I need to go about this cult that you were in last year.
Oh, my God.
What the hell happened? What's it called? I need to Google this.
This goes back to my mom. Go watch her episode. I'm kidding. She's the one who got me into it. So Landmark, personal development company, training development, who I, by the way, I'm really sorry everyone I recruited for that in Southwestern quite a bit.
Yeah. Your mom mentioned Landmark, but she did not define it as a cult.
That's because she's deep in it.
No,
she knows that it's cultish. And that's the thing. If you're like tread lightly at the very low level, you're fine. It's just like personal development classes. And like, I learned a lot about myself and like all these like theories and practices that they teach you. And it's like, okay, this is great. But when you get deep in it, which I was, it gets weird as heck.
What happened? What can you tell us? Don't tell us anything you can't say, but if you tell us.
It's not like they have any control over me right now.
I don't know.
No, you don't know anything. So
before we get
so actually something. Here's what I realized. So of course I like did like their curriculum for living thing before the summers, and actually I felt like that was one of the main reasons I did well my second summer because I had just finished all that, and that's you get a lot of your stuff out of the way, and that was very clear. After my stroke, So before I'll say before my second summer, I was candidated for as an introduction leader. What that means is that I'm able to like lead introductions to the Landmark Forum, which is their main course.
Student manager.
Correct. Correct. Like I'm able to do the presentations and talk to people, you know.
Just before that, in Southwestern very, terms.
Oh my god. Similarly, actually. But yeah, so I was like able to, I felt very like on top of the world, you know, and I was on a high, you know. So that all happened. And then of course, after, you know, in order to like get to the next level, start leading like main courses, you have to lead to this many people, like 100 people, and I did effectively, which then qualified me to go into the apprenticeship program, which I was in. Which I was in like fall of 21. Yeah, that apprenticeship program. And I was like, it was very intense. What I realized, and it was at the time, actually, I was on this call last, is okay. I really like felt like a failure in so many areas of my life, every area of my life after my stroke. But the one thing I realized I could still do well is lead those introductions. So what I do, I just did that. I did that so much during COVID when they like needed me because like no one was doing online and I was. So I latched on. I guess you could say that I like trauma bonded with them.
Wow.
In a big way. But yeah, so that's what it became a lot of, is I felt like I found something that I was still good at in my life. And I was deep in it, and it was really intense. I was going through these very high level trainings that's basically trying to tell you that your feelings are invalid. They're like not a part of you, and to like how to like acknowledge them but not honor them, and then actually like go to work and like get shit done. And I'm like, that's fair, it's useful, but it's also making you a robot. So I'm like, I'm not interested in that particular thing. And then I was always stressed, and I was like having to like try and do other stuff. And I remember actually at work, the team I was on for like a year, he during my first performance review, he said he was going to talk to me about it, because you could tell that something was going on in my life. Like I was really busy with other stuff and not focused on the work. And I was like, this was after I told him I'd left already. I was so deep in actually Tyson, who's my partner, former partner. He basically pulled me out of that.
That's wild, dude.
Got me out of the cult, and it was like a huge, and I told him at the time when I was leaving, it felt like I was voluntarily having another stroke, because it was like so much of my life was enveloped in this cult. And you know, that was the biggest thing. Like when I left Southwestern, like all of a sudden, because I had a stroke, like my entire life, my entire friend group, no one reached out to me. I felt very abandoned. I felt like I was bad at everything. And suddenly it's like, I'm voluntarily choosing to leave like my entire friend group again. And I'm like, this is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And like everything I was doing, like I was literally working like 30 to 40 hours a week voluntarily for them. So I didn't know what else to do with my time, legitimately. But I was able to, per Tyson's coaching, kind of like encourage me to fill my life in other healthy ways, such as volunteering at CSU, which is an organization in OKC that supports youth who are experiencing on homelessness. 54% of which queer identifying, getting involved with Boeing, like things that do there with their DRGs. We'll get into that, but I'm very involved in DE&I at Boeing now. Yeah, you know, it's just getting really involved and making my life rich with actual meaningful things as opposed to a cult.
Dude, so crazy. Okay, so what was harder to leave, Southwestern or Landmark?
Well, I didn't really have a choice to leave Southwestern, but
true.
Because
that's fair. That's fair. But I mean, I guess, but you know what I'm trying to say? Which one was more magnety?
That's great. It's all, a lot of it's how it left, you know? Because Southwestern, it felt like it was stolen from me. Like I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, after.
With Landmark, it was actually, like I was choosing, and people would always tell me, like they knew Tyson was like not a good influence on me for it. You know, he actually had registered for the course, and then in talking with the person, got really bad. They were yelling at each other. And then he was always very against it, you know? And then they'd always tell me, like, we're going to never coach you to break up with him. But I had a conversation with one person who was kind of like the high, high, high level of like what I'm trying to be. And she manipulated the conversation so that I discovered I have to break up with him. And I started to do that, actually.
It's like one of those PCs.
Yeah, I mean, but essentially like a PC, except like I discovered that I had to break up with him was the only solution to what I want in life, you know? And I started to do it the next day, and then he said, I was like, what the F am I doing, you know? Like,
wow.
That's wild. You know, so that's what happened. That's
crazy.
I wrote a whole book about it, you know, my experience at Landmark, but yeah.
Wow. And did it cost to get in or be in it? Huh?
Yeah, it definitely cost a lot of money.
That's so wild.
Yeah, because they're paying for like personal development courses. People in Southwestern do it. Just ask them.
That's wild. How many book kids are in Landmark? Is that a lot?
A lot.
Really? That's super interesting.
Justin Hellas talked about it in the speech. That's one point. Yeah.
Huh. I did not know that. Yeah. Very interesting. I didn't know. Anytime now that people call me with things like that, I'm like, no, I'm not a fan. I'm not, and I don't, let me rephrase. I don't judge people for being in things like Landmark or MITT or whatever the other ones are. That are like, yeah. If that's what people need to like have something to keep them accountable or move forward in life, fucking awesome. And if they have the means to, great. I don't, but me personally, yeah, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's kind of like some people see that fitness. It's kind of like a fitness, like those people who are like shredded, and it's like, you know, that's a lifestyle. You have to dedicate, sacrifice.
I have this part of it.
And yeah. And you're a gym rat now is what you were saying earlier. Huh?
I said, I'm definitely a gym rat now. Thanks to St. Gallagher.
Yeah. And again, like it, same thing with those guys. Like I see Seth Hood and he's like shredded and I'm like, dude, that's awesome. That is so cool for you. And if that helps you stay accountable and if that helps you give meaning in life and it gives you energy and it brings you life, great. But I don't need to have six pack like that. I mean, I don't want to be like unhealthy, but I don't need it. I want to be able to enjoy a taco. You know what I'm saying? Like I want to be
able to enjoy tacos very much.
But no, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like I don't want to keep track of my calories. I could, but I'd rather focus on the things that bring me life, which is doing this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And one could say I'm just as brainwashed into this as people are at Landmark. Maybe brainwashed is a strong word, but you know what I'm saying? I'm drinking this Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? And that's okay. Kool-Aid. It's my own Kool-Aid and I made it. So that's good. It's all right.
It's all nice and pretty.
I don't want that Landmark Kool-Aid.
Fun fact, I was Seth's first customer.
Were you really?
I was. I literally, when he finished the summer, I like called up Seth. I'm like, hey, I need you to train me because I'm fat.
Oh, that was when it was Relentless, right? It was called Relentless at the time. Instead what? Of it was his company was called something else at the time.
Elevate Wellness.
Well, now it's Elevate Wellness, but I think at the beginning it was Relentless or something, wasn't it?
I don't remember. I mean, it was when Zane and Seth were together, and I don't know.
Oh,
I can't say everything by the way, by the split and all that, but I don't know. But yeah, I've always worked with Zane throughout the whole process.
Yeah,
really. I mean, with Seth was like, but I was their first customer.
And they sponsored us for a little bit.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was cool. That's awesome, man. So how's that fitness journey been for you? You been all right?
You're looking, awesome. You're looking
great.
What?
You're looking great.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
No, I'm basically a gym rat. It's great because like I choose and I do put in the work, and then of course it's not perfect, but no, it's really good because what Zane's doing with me now. So I think it's actually that call with you. I got really involved with Brain Balance, which was a program my dad had always kind of talked to me about, but I never really knew about. But the idea is that your brain, there's a right and the left, and supposedly, you know, most issues that people encounter, it's like there's an imbalance between the right and the left side. Now, I don't agree 100% with all the theories because, like, they believe you can kind of cure autism, and I'm like, neurodiversity. But That being said, my dad has suggested it, and I actually went there for stroke recovery. And a lot of it was similar to like physical therapy. I did do physical therapy, but it was different. It's like brain physical therapy. It's like I'm doing exercises that are like training different aspects of my brain. They did like a full assessment to tell me how. And they told me when I got there, they were like, you're operating like a 4-year-old in some areas and like a 10-year-old in others and like a 16-year-old in others. I'm like, whoa, that's weird. But I actually got like a huge like printout chart of like my entire life of my brain's development. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. Then I went through the whole progress and they showed me how I had developed in when I left, like the numbers, how far I'd gone, and then where they were gaps that were still wanting me to do. And they were wanting to kind of sell the program again, kind of like the adult version, and it's very expensive.
It sounds
and then I went to Zane. I'm like, hey, so like, can you help me with this kind of stuff? Because specifically what was still bad was like my gait, my balance kind of things, and then like fine motor skills and equilibrium. And I'm like, can you just incorporate some stuff like that into my workouts? He's like, yeah, I got you. So yeah, now it's like
kinesthetic stuff, like just like the things that
like what he does, like there's normal workout stuff, and then like at the end of it we'll just like practice different, or he incorporates different exercises that actually specifically work on equilibrium and balance. And so like I'm doing the ropes, or I'm doing like balancing on Bosu balls and other things that really do challenge my balance. And we've seen like and he has me like rate the difficulty like 1 to 10. And like I've seen like once like jump roping was like impossible for such a long time. Like I literally can never get more than like 2 or 3. Now I can just like go hard on it. Yeah, no, legitimately 2 or 3 was like impossible for me. Now I can get like a good like 120 in a row. So it's like kind of progress like that of actually seeing where I started and where I am now. And actually he wants me, and then he's right, I should probably go do another assessment and kind of see how far I've come since they kind of relinquished me, you know? Because they told me that like this past May or so is when we really started hitting that hard, doing all the training. And I'm also seeing someone else. I'm seeing a chiropractor, a sports therapist guy, almost like 3 times a month. And technically what he's doing is he's working out scar tissue that the physical therapist gave me because anyway.
Yeah.
So like to have custom inserts, he put a little pad on it to try and fix custom inserts were eaten by a dog, chewed on. And he's like, I can fix that, put a little pad on that, and I wore it through the summer. And it actually like just created scar tissue on my foot. It's really bad. But he's been like working on that for now over a year, which just helps some, but it just goes in phases. But he also does like, we work on some equilibrium stuff there too, which is nice because with Zane, it's all virtual, so he can't actually see me, but he's actually cast us like right there, so we can kind of like give me coaching on the different like skills and things. He's really awesome.
It's wild when you learn that stuff. I've been going to a physical therapist for like a year and a half now, and like certain like little movements where it's like, all right, do this. And I think I'm all big and strong and whatever. And then he'll have me do like a certain move where no weights or anything, but it's just insane. Like it's just like body weight stuff. And I'm like, this is outrageous. Why is this so hard? Or like I'll go in there and I'm like, hey, this is really hurting. Like I have a specific pain here, blah, blah, blah. And they'll press somewhere like in near my hip instead, where it's nowhere near the actual place where it hurts. Like my knee hurts, but he'll press on my hip or whatever. And then immediately it's like a relief because like they know the way that the body's doing this and that. It's phenomenal to see.
Yeah,
this stuff is crazy.
My legs have been going numb like last fall it started happening, but my legs would just kind of go numb sometimes. Like, what the heck's happening? And so I went to Cass and I was like, I don't know what's happening. Am I developing MS or something? He's like, no, I see this all the time. You're fine. And so he's started putting me in like the roller, like a table where it would just like stretch my legs out a little bit for like scoliosis type stuff. But apparently it was just like my low back, it's getting pinched kind of thing. And so it actually has helped significantly, but
yeah. Yeah, it's wild stuff, man. That's so cool. Hell yeah. That's great. All right, let me ask you about Boeing. So you started working at Boeing. Tell me tell the people, I know, but I want you to tell what you do at Boeing. Because I think this is
now? So cool.
Well, what you told me
at business. Journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Big journey to get there. Do you want me to start at the end or beginning?
Let's just go from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so, work our way to the good old
Liz. So here's how it started at Boeing. I legit backtrack. So like after that, the call, because if you remember when I was on the call, I don't remember if I talked about it at all, but I was actually very much panicked. It was the middle of the pandemic and I'm like, no one's hiring.
Yeah.
No one is hiring anybody. And I'm about to graduate with my degree in music composition and mechanical engineering. I'm like, I can't find a job. This is stupid. So it was around the time that I started going to Brain Balance. My dad comes to me and he's like, so we need to figure out if you should apply to be an engineer or if you should spend more time to recover on your stroke kind of thing. And he's like, go to your professors and ask if you can be an engineer. So I do. I go to one of my professors and he's like, how am I supposed to answer that? He's like, go to the Disability Resource Center. And I do. And they're like, what the heck? How do I answer that? I go to engineering. I'm like, who the heck can answer this very critical question? You know, can I be an engineer or not? But then this is after I graduated, like, summa cum laude, by the way.
Check out the big brain on Anthony.
No, that side note about that, I'll talk about that later. What I just discovered, learned something, has to do with body dysmorphia, actually. This whole idea that, like, I don't think I'm that smart, but I actually still am in some ways. And so it's, like, mental dysmorphia because, like, I don't think that I am, but I
yes.
can't. So it's, like, it's very similar to body dysmorphia, but it's mental dysmorphia. And I just learned that at a conference, actually, a Boeing conference I went to. So
very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Just talking to somebody. So there I am and I'm like, I don't know. So actually that professor, he hooked me up with somebody who he said hires a Boeing, and I'm thinking he's an HR guy, you know, and he's kind of mentoring me and he's just asking me questions like what I want to do. And I tell him that I want to be an acoustic engineer. That's like my ultimate dream. And it's an acoustic engineer is like someone who designs acoustics of like concert halls, churches.
Yeah. That stuff is phenomenal. That's really cool. Yeah.
Which I'll talk about that later too, how that's actually happening. This guy, he's like talking, explains different things, talks about the difference between contract work versus like direct work for a company. And I'm like, okay, whatever. This is critical that I mentioned this, is that I actually got my medical marijuana card.
In Oklahoma. That's right.
Yeah. So what had happened is I'd been working to get that. And then he tells me one day that he's like, okay, so I've got this figured out. He's like, I'm going to hire you at Boeing. This is what you're going to be doing. You're going to be taking 2D drawings and turn to 3D models and like the software. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. You know, I didn't really think much about it. Then I got my card and I went and I smoked weed and I was just trying to do it to sleep, you know, because I had like insomnia that I was dealing with. But I didn't think it was anything. And then like that Tuesday after, no, actually what happened is I smoked the weed and I was like, tried an indica and I couldn't sleep with it. My brain was going crazy. Then I could not fall asleep. And then I woke up to the Capitol being stormed. And I was like, what the hell is happening?
Nice. You know?
Yeah.
Good January.
I know, right? But then that like Tuesday or something, I was in yoga and I get a call during it. I'm like, hey, whatever. I answer in the middle of it. And then I get a call from a contracting company. Like, we're hiring you. I'm like, oh, okay. This is legitimate. And then I start freaking out because like, Boeing, defense, weed is not okay.
Yeah, they do drug checks.
Government contracts. And then I talked to my friend who's in aerospace, and he says, oh, yeah, no, they do follicle testing. They pull out your follicles, and they can pick up anything, any usage in, like, the last 90 days. I'm like, so I'm not even joking. I, like, went on Amazon and ordered, like, every follicle cleaning cream possible. Did each of them twice. I legit had someone come over and help me take a shower and clean out all my hair and my entire body. Because I'm so anxious. I'm going to miss this job for Boeing because of one time.
For medical reasons, yeah.
Yeah, for medical reasons, even that. And then I... that life is like May or something. I go there, they hand me a cup.
Can you pee?
Are you kidding me right now? Are you kidding me? But, yeah. So that was fine. I started Boeing.
Sick.
That fall. But actually, then, that, in the summer, I was like, I need to do something. So I was an instructor at Methanasium for that summer, which was good because it was kind of stressing or pushing my brain and practicing that brain type stuff in preparation for engineering. And I legit have an engineering degree, but also it's like all of us are really underpaid. So anyway, I was very happy to leave.
Yeah, I can
remember. Started Boeing. It was really good. I really liked it for like a week. Then I hated it.
But then it got better.
No.
But then it got better with the project that you get to work on.
No.
No? I think it's so cool.
We're getting there.
All right.
So I was on the team for like 2 months, and of course everything is new. I'm really stressed because everything I'm doing is like not at all related to my degree. The only thing related is that one class I took SolidWorks in, which is the 3D modeling software we use at OU. And suddenly, like, we're doing CATIA. I'm like, what the heck's CATIA? It's a different, it's the same company, but different software entirely that's much less user-friendly. I cannot figure it out. Like, I'm getting stressed out. I'm spending like hours not like trying to figure out what to do because you can't figure out. You have to like, you want to do this function, this skill, but you can't find the icon, the button for it. I'm like searching around and going insane and like all that. And I was being, you know, frankly, I was being harassed for my disability. Like, they didn't know that I was disabled, but like I was going in thinking like I'm a disabled engineer. Like, this is going to be hard already, you know? So, like, it was pretty rough my first time. He would kind of yell at
that's
me.
That's fair. Yeah.
He would straight up yell at me all the time. And then, which is not okay at Boeing, by the way, at all. And then, of course, I had issues on with the software that no one in the entire enterprise of Boeing, which is good. I don't know how big, they're huge. I was the only person who had this issue. I'm like, why me? So I literally went to the top to try and figure out a person who can try and fix this issue. And like, I couldn't. So I was dealing with that for a long time. And it was just really frustrating. And then suddenly I got transferred to a different team because like that project I was doing, don't get excited. There's a long journey before you get there. So go to a different team, and that one is great. It's the radar modernization project program. The first plane I started on was B-52, which is the oldest tanker in the Air Force, and of course I dealt with. Yes, and it was also like, so I'm literally working on killing people. Cool. Wonderful. That's a thing you have to work through.
Man, it's the way of the world. Be Amish otherwise.
That's for engineering, yeah.
We're streaming on Macs that were probably built by people who live awfully.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So RMP, the Radar Modernization Project, was actually a really good team. I very much enjoyed that. That's what I was doing like the Christmas of 21. It was awesome. You know, I very much enjoyed it. I was just doing in our software that we release stuff out of Boeing through is called CM Pro, Configuration Management Professional. And I like found I was jiving there. Like, I was really good at that. Going through and, you know, kind of going through the process of getting stuff out, pulling people, pulling stress, pulling manufacturing, pulling like everybody to get the approvals to release the documents. And like, I was really good at that. And I found like my place at Boeing. I'm like, this is awesome. And then of course that project ended in January of 22. Yeah. And in January, I'm like, okay, well now where do I go? You know? So they sent me back to my original team. I'm like, oh God. I did that for like 2 weeks. And then during this time, actually, so I was hired at Boeing under one manager who immediately transferred me to someone else, like loaned me out. So I was working directly reporting to someone else, but I was always kind of on paper under him. He's great, but then I was getting frustrated. And so I actually applied for a different like job, which I did do the interview with, phone interview. And I requested to like have a video on because I'm hard of hearing and like, hey, I need to read lips. They're like, no, we can't do that. I'm like, okay, well, you know,
bye.
So
yeah.
So I kind of like bullshitted, whatever. But then we go back and then that manager calls me freaking out. He's like, hey, so I heard that your appliance were, he said, I want you. I want you on my team. I am creating two requisites, putting on the website, and then just apply to that and the job is yours. I'm like, okay, cool. That sounds good. And he told me that basically what I'd be doing is the exact same thing that it was doing on B-52, but on KC-135, which is one of the tankers in the Air Force. Which is cool.
Yeah.
It's a legacy tanker. So I go into that one, and what we're doing is the horizontal stabilizer, remastering it. So actually when I joined the team, manager, he's really fun. He's the guy who actually did my Boeing drawings class, like learning how to read Boeing drawings. That's a whole thing. Like being able to read drawings that engineers made in like the 60s, 50s, that actually do have errors and stuff like that, and trying to decipher them, things like that. So he's the manager now. He's great. But right when I joined, he actually split the team from what was called, what's called Spares, which is basically that software I was saying I was really good at, the CM Pro. That's all they do exclusively. And that's the other team. And then I go on the one that's HDAB, horizontal stabilizer, remastering that, which just seems really fun, but it's all the modeling stuff that I'm actually really bad at. Like, and I had not done that for months. So I'm back and I'm just trying to figure out how do I work the software, you know? Oh, you're looking up pictures.
Yeah, that's I'm looking it up. Yeah, this so this is what you were working on, this airplane.
Yeah. So, and the team is great. I mean, I love the team. They're wonderful.
That's great.
But, yeah, so it's just us doing that, and I'm trying to figure out how to create the models. I'm really bad at it. Yeah, and then that was the time that that manager, he pulled me aside, and then he's like, when I told him that I had just left the cold, he's like, yeah, I was going to talk to you about that because I can tell that something's going on, you know. Yeah, so what it does is it's like while the two planes are flying, they'll fly up in parallel to each other. I can't get my hands to go this way. And then it like fuels it like midair, you know.
You're working on it getting fueled midair.
Correct. Like I was the plane. It was a plane that would fuel midair. Now, I mean, KC-135 is a staple. It's been around forever. There are newer ones coming out, or there's newer ones that are out, like KC-46, things like that. Which is the reason I got Claire's, by the way.
But how long can these? How long can these planes go, theoretically? Because you can't just keep running them forever, even though you can refuel them in the air. They have to land and rest.
It depends. It really depends on the engineering. So the B-52. Of course, was first released in 1952.
Makes sense.
It is still flying and will outfly its newer versions like the B-1, the B-2.
But like how long can they fly like in one go?
That depends on if they get refueled midair or not.
But like, yeah, let's assume that they get refueled midair. You're telling me that this airplane can go for like, do they just switch off some engine and start the other ones or what? Or how long in hours can it stay in the air for even with refueling in the air?
I don't know that answer.
Oh, I'm fascinated.
I just don't know that answer. I'm sorry.
I'm fascinated.
Because it's like when they're in like a war zone, you know, they can't just like land there if they're like running out of fuel. So they have to send in. It's, right. It's all very strategic. You know, there's planes like the AWACS and the AUWC, which are like the strategic, like actual getting location of the enemies, knowing where all the planes are, their radars, things like that. And so those are one of those critical airplanes because you actually know what's happening. We do that in OKC as well. But then of course, tankers, they're the life fuel of it. So it's like the planes can keep going and then you can refuel them. Like they don't have to stop and refuel them. And then the meat and potatoes, you know, is the bombers. We also do in OKC. It's like, those are like the plane attack. We don't do any fighters in OKC. That's like St. Louis.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went from KC-135. What then? What happened?
Well, okay, so I'm in there, and then I'm of course I'm really bad at 3D modeling. I just am. I'm a bad design engineer. I really am.
Hey.
So I'm struggling, and my lead did not like that I was struggling. But also the program, that whole problem is like very much high pressure. Like the senior management is like kind of forcing it. It's, you know, we're contracting with their Spirit Airlines, and the all Spirit is like kind of just forcing like under stay in our budget, stay in our timeline. It's very high pressure, and it's only gotten worse since I left. But so what was happening is the lead, like some of the stress that he was experiencing was coming out on me. But like he legit. You know, I remember there was a time that like I forgot my headset in the office. And so I had to call him through my phone, which you wouldn't think normally is a big deal, except when you're hard of hearing. Mm. And like, I legit cannot understand what he was saying because I've lost my hearing in the low range. He has a deeper voice. And so like, I'm getting flustered. I can't understand him. And he started yelling at me because it's like, I'm sorry. Like I'm legitimately hard of hearing, you know?
Yeah,
what am I supposed to do?
Literally can't hear you. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost my hearing aids. I lost my hearing aids like 2 years ago. Still don't have them. But yeah, it was extremely frustrating. It's like blatant harassment. And by the way, this guy's been reported for harassment before to Boeing. But then the other thing, he would get frustrated with some errors and mistakes I'd make in my models and then, like, yell at me for it. I'm like, dude, you know? And I remember a specific time, a day that happened. It was, like, the morning, and he just, like, he's yelling at me. He's like, I don't know why you keep screwing all this stuff. It's probably because of your stroke.
Oh. Yikes.
I'm like, yo! Yes, you're probably right. And also, that is something you cannot say ever.
In the yeah, that's fucked.
Yeah, I recently said that to like a senior manager. She's like, there are certain things that you should never be said in the workplace, and that is one of them.
Yeah.
I remember like I legit just like logged off or went and just typed to Tyson. I was like, I can't do this, you know? And that's actually when I went to my manager. Oh, I was like, hey, this is a big issue. Like, we need to talk about this, you know? Like that was just like straight up harassment. I actually went to a different lead who was really great. He's like the only other lead who is gay. He could tell that I was gay within like the first couple of minutes, and good stuff came from that. I'll get to that in a second too. Yeah, so he recruited me. So I'll continue the same story. So my manager, he's like, hey, let's kind of keep it quiet and just deal with this internally before I go into HR. If it doesn't get better, then we can go to HR. And I was like, that's fine. So we did, and I said, I don't want to get this guy fired because I was told by the lead who I first told that was happening. He's like, yeah, they'll let him go if you tell him this because he's been reported for harassment before. And I'm like, I don't want that, you know, but at the same time, yeah. So it's basically what happened after that is I got thrown off 100% to doing the stuff that I like to do in CM Pro, where I'm basically just making parts lists. Which if you think about what a parts list is, essentially, if you think of a Lego set, it's, you know, that like that first page that tells you like the number.
This is what's supposed to be on. Yeah, this many things are supposed to be.
This many parts. Yeah. There's like this many squares, this many rectangles, yeah. Things like that.
So IKEA building manuals are like that. Yeah,
basically. So the parts list is essentially that, but it's also like not just what it is, but also it's the details like. You have to look up the databases, like what material it is, like updating the specs and the materials, and then also calling out specs of like, you know, you need to make sure if it's corrosive materials, like prevent corrosion, things like that. So it's like getting all that kind of background information. I love that. I really did. I was really good at it. And so I got to do that exclusively for a good like 3, 4, or 5 months, you know? Last fall. And it was great. I loved it. It was like my favorite time at Boeing because I'm like just jamming, you know? Kind of turn it out until they ran out of stuff for me to do. Legitimately.
And then you had to leave that team.
Well, yes and no. Yes, essentially. So this is also critical to now too. So that one lead I was talking about who kind of identified that I was gay because he did too. He recruited me for the Pride Association, and I was just as a part of it, like as a member, you know, but I would actually attend the calls with them like every other week. And I'm thinking cool. These are like just the calls everyone gets on. I come to later find out they're only the leadership calls, but he was kind of like pushing me the leadership call thing. I loved it. So last fall, I applied to be the co-chair of it, and then someone else applied to be co-chair too. And then they're like, oh, well, you got 2 co-chairs, but like no chair, so who wants to be chair? And I was like, I'll do it.
Nice.
So I became the president of the Pride Association.
For Boeing? Awesome.
What?
For Boeing?
Yeah. That's for Boeing.
So, cool.
There's a lot of stuff, things have gone on from that. This is just the start of it. So that started, and then so it was around so the Boeing has a break every year. You basically get a full week off. And I remember that I was like so bad at the CATIA stuff, like the modeling things. I legit did training during that week. I was like going in and like working hard at training to get better at my skills I was really bad at. Because I was determined to get good at it. And then I remember I met with my manager like in January. And I told him that like, you know, like if I could just like do something that was exclusively in CM Pro, it would be awesome. Because I'm like really good at that. And then my coworker, who was like our point person for that aspect of the on my team, she said that they're hiring. And I was like, you know, if great. I just work with them, like I feel like I'm really jamming, you know, it'd be awesome. And then later, like about beginning of February, he calls me, my manager, and he says, hey, so I've worked it out, and I've worked it, we're going to actually be transferred to that team in a temporary loan. And I think, okay, cool. This would be nice because we had just delivered our first big package to Spirit Airlines. And I'm thinking, okay, cool. It'll be a temporary loan, like an in-between while Spirit is doing their thing. Then they're going to send it back to us to kind of continue working on. Like, this works, you know? And I actually initially said no because I'm like, I'm determined. I've been working to get better at that skill that I've identified as a weakness. Like, I'm determined. I don't shy away, you know?
Yeah.
And so I...
Bookman.
Exactly. So I said no, but then I, you know, of course, I'm getting kind of coaching with my dad, things like that. And then eventually said yes. And I'm thinking, this is a temporary loan. Cool. I'm going back to the same team. And so I go there and immediately, like, I hate it.
Sure.
Because all the things that I loved about when I was doing it, going in, like, completing the documents, doing the research, getting all the different parts, the aspects of them, like the materials, the sizing, things like that. I don't know any of that. What I do is create the document for the engineer to fill out.
Oh, so now you're like having to learn a whole new thing.
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy, but
still, it's just like product outside
manager. So I'm a configuration and data manager. And originally, so I joined that team. Yeah, and I really did not like it because, like, I'm, you know, she was telling me over and over again, because I do it, she's like, stop doing too much work. This is not your job. You have to, like, just make it for the engineers to fill out. I'm like, but I'm an engineer, you know? And I really wanted to be that. And then for a long time, I felt like they didn't think I could be an engineer. So they gave me a non-engineering job. And it was really frustrating.
That's shitty.
Because on the team, actually, that I'm on, and this is the team I'm on right now, there's both engineers and non-engineers. But on the specific team that I work with, none of them are engineers. None of them. I mean, one of them, she used to be a nurse, and the other people is just like, you know, product security kind of thing. So it's like none of them are engineers. Now there are engineers under my manager, but not for me, you know. And there's like two different skill codes. There's what's called the PLM engineer and PLM. PLM is product lifecycle manager.
Okay, I was gonna say I don't know what that means.
Sorry, but because all acronyms, like, that's the hardest thing new hires say, is like there's so many Boeing acronyms. Product lifecycle manager, engineer, and product lifecycle manager, like technician. So majority on my team are the technician kind. But
but what's the plane you work on?
I started working with on KC-135 from the other side, you know, with that first person. But that was kind of like, she wasn't the best trainer. She's so busy. She does so much stuff. But then there's someone else on a different, like, it's all macro, like the same team, but just a different aircraft.
Yeah. What aircraft, Anthony?
Calm down and getting there, Andres. Different aircraft, and she's like been asking for like help for a long time apparently, so this I had to transfer to her 100%, and that's on Air Force One.
Oh, casual.
Oh, whatever.
You yeah. Work on Air Force One.
I do work on Air Force One. Oh, can I go with the polo? I actually have a polo to get it. The polo says Air Force One on it.
Yeah. You just can't just casually drop, I worked on Air Force One. Like, I wanted to get to that. I wanted to get to that. Let's see. Here's the polo.
Okay. Yeah.
That's so, what part of Air Force One did you work on?
Where's the front? Oh, just the whole thing. So we're, I work with the SEATs. So SEAT is basically system integration. They're system engineers. And so I work as a function of system engineering, kind of supporting them as they get like documents, process things.
Are you allowed to talk about like the things about that project?
I can't talk about specifics.
Like if I was to ask you, okay. If I was to ask you like, what is, okay. Let me just put it this way. So in 2006, I think it was 2006, George W. Bush came to Grand Island, Nebraska for some fucking reason. And he spoke there. And I saw when they landed, like the airport in Grand Island was not big enough like it was just too small. The runway was too small for Air Force One because it's huge. And so like they had to like concrete in some stuff. And then his motorcade came through and it was like this bulletproof. Obviously it's bulletproof because it's the president in there, but next to a different limo that was just like some company got hired to like carry the other people. Next to his limo looked like it was like it worked out with Zane. Like it looked massive. So you could see the difference. There was something about that car that was different. And obviously the plane was different. So if I was to ask you, between a regular ass plane and Air Force One, what are some differences that like, maybe it's common knowledge to people in your space, but in general.
Regular ass plane, that's all relative. You know, I'm pretty sure I keep forgetting which it is. So technically it's not Air Force One unless the president's on it. It's VC-25A. The second person steps on it is Air Force One.
So if the president gets into like a little, you know, propeller engine plane, that's Air Force One?
Yes.
Cool. Otherwise it's called what? VC?
It's VC-25A.
What does that stand for?
And there's actually VC-25B. We also do some of that in OKC too.
Is that like the vice president's airplane?
No. Vice president is I think it's E4B. What I'm on the team, ETSS, which is Executive Transport Support.
Yeah.
You know this. Executive Transport Systems and Support. I forget that says. We do VC-25. We do E-4B. We do C-32, C-40. And then GSG, which is basically executive transport for other countries like Japan and Poland and
now,
India.
All of this you're telling me I could just Google, right? Is what yes. you're saying? Okay, yeah. I just haven't. Okay, I just don't want you to get in trouble for like saying some shit you're not supposed to, but you probably know what you're not supposed to talk about. And what,
I also wanted my stroke things to say too much.
I know. So like, I just don't think we publish this and all of a sudden it's a national security matter.
Well, and that's the thing.
The
program I work on does not require clearance. We have something called OPSEC, which is operation security. So there's like specific ways we have to do stuff to maintain the security. But no, it doesn't require clearance. The reason I have clearance is because my manager wanted to transfer me to start supporting a different program that does require clearance to work on and even touch, which I've never wanted to do. But I got the clearance, and that's the most stressful thing in my life ever. It's such a stressful process.
Yeah.
It's insane. But anyway, so I work on VC, and that's – it's been great. I mean, I've like really just fallen in love with that. I'm actually really good at what I do. It's just like not doesn't actually like stretch me at all, and it's not using my engineering skills whatsoever. And so recently, like this past summer, I started going to – there's a program in Oklahoma City called the Engineering Skills Rotation Program. It's a development program for early career engineers where you get to do musical chairs with each other's jobs and try out different kinds of engineering for a year. I was going to apply for that, but then I was like short by 1 month of when I can actually do it because you have to be 2 years. And I was like 1 year, 11 months. And I was like, whatever. And it's the person who was in it, who was kind of pushing me to do it, she's like, just apply anyway. It's fine. They might make an exception. Turns out that they didn't get enough people to apply for it. So they extended it past the net. Definitely met it. So it's pretty highly competitive. They only accept 10 people per year. Did a couple interviews for that. And I got accepted. So I'm beginning that in January. And I found out when I was at a conference recently that my first position, I was like one of two people slated to do production engineering, where I would go to England for 28-day stints and be on the side of the aircraft on the E7. Turns out that's not going to happen anymore, likely. But I'm trying to do stress engineering. I'm actually back on K735 for my first cycle. But that would be really cool, you know? That would be good.
That's career sick.
Development, opportunity for 3 years, and then the different new positions will open up as new people come in and then other people leave. So it's super cool. We just like a big development opportunity, and I love it. So that's where things are going to go. But I'm also like, I was super excited that I'd be back to engineering again, because for a long time I felt like I wasn't an engineer until actually recently, whenever I applied for that And then I had to look up, my manager had to put in my code, like, what's my coding in the system? And I looked it up, and it's, like, legit, like, engineering coding. So it's, like, I'm technically an engineer, whatever. And I talked to my coworker, and the one that really kind of pushed me to be on the team, and she's like, you're an engineer supporting engineers, and I'm a non-engineer supporting engineers. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. We did the same thing. you do more than I do, but actually a big reason why I didn't want to be on this whole team is because I'm like, I get paid more as an engineer. But the skill codes is basically the same. So like, I can legit just stay and get paid almost as much, if not more. Well, not more, but.
Hell yeah.
Very comparable amount. I mean, it's like $1,000 less a year, and that's it. But
right.
That being said, so I was talking about DEI, how I'm the president of the Pride Association. And that's been really good. I got to be like in charge of like leading the parades, doing like different events for Boeing and all that. But at the same time, back in like January, I remember that I attended an event. It was like an open panel discussion about the hiring process because they were like the new site director. He's like trying to look at, he found gaps and people like, there's not a lot of retention. People come to Boeing and leave within like 6 months or so. He's like trying to figure out what are we missing? Hiring process.
It's probably the homie with the harassment charges. I'm just kidding.
I'm getting to that.
Oh, you are?
That's where I'm going.
I was joking, but hey.
That's where I'm going.
That's exactly. Spidey senses. They tingle.
They tingled. But, yeah, so it's like, I was talking, and I was like, we got a kind of complaints. And I'm like, okay, so, and they said, like, what other comments do you have? Like, okay, let me tell you the real shit, you know? And I just told him, I'm like, hey, so this has been my entire experience at Boeing. I've thought of quitting multiple times. And I've just been harassed so many times. And it's been absolutely horrible for disabled people like me. And this is unacceptable, you know? And I'm like, I'm done with this, you know? And he got to bring that directly to the site director, you know? And then same day, I was at my first full DE&I council meeting that I attended. And it was like a panel of all these people. And then one of them is my engineering best friend's fiance, whether or not they were together, fiance at the time or not. But anyway, she's cool, and she was previous year's chair of all of D&I. And she told me that her new position is like the assistant to the site director. So she's like really close to him, you know?
Mm.
And I looked with her, and I said, hey, you know, look at all these different groups that we support in Boeing. We have the Black Association. We have the Asian Pacific Islander Association. We have the Pride Association. We have, you know, Women in Leadership. What's missing? What's blatantly missing? There's nothing for people like me.
And you're talking specifically for like the LGBTQ plus
community. No, the president of that one. I'm saying people like me who are disabled.
Oh, with auditory hearing. Okay. That's what
I was like. Auditory is any kind of disability.
Well, okay. So hang on. So they don't have anything at all for disabled people? Do you think that that's probably one of the older ones? You're
getting way ahead of things. So. Yes, they did. Boeing as a whole has the Boeing Employee Ability Awareness Association. Oklahoma City did not have a chapter of said Ability Awareness Association. And I pointed it out to her because she pointed out to me that there actually is one. We just don't have one here. And she's like, that's going to be my personal mission this year is to actually get that established. And so I started working with her like fairly closely. We started kind of building a team and kind of working this out throughout like multiple months. As like the founder of that Ability Awareness Association, which is insane because like 20% of all of Boeing and specifically defense, because Oklahoma City is all defense, 20% hiring veterans, and like how many veterans have some kind of disability?
Disability, yeah. So
like insane.
That's why I'm shocked that they didn't already like exist down in general in Boeing.
Well, and so it has to be driven by the employees that like you want this, you know, that this is what's needed and wanted. So we start just building a team. Eventually we bring on a chair. So it's like me, we kind of decided she coached me. I can't be the chair of two ones at the same time. And so it's like, I think what you really want to do, because I said that I want to help people like find resources, like the ability, like accommodations, because it took me forever to get the accommodations. Like I couldn't even like find where to go. So I had to go to HR to ask for the accommodation sheet. And I'm like, why are you not like giving this to me when I like literally put that I'm disabled on my applications? Like, why don't you be like, hey, here's the application for reasonable accommodations. Like, that's just like, why did you not do that? You know, you're getting like tax credit for me being disabled, but you're not following through. Anyway, side note. But I said, I want to be the person that actually helps people get resources, you know, be able to be functional at work and as they deal with things, you know? And so she, that same person who she's now like the advisor to all D&I, she's like, I think that you, where you really find a home would be in like the professional development chair, like helping people professionally development and like getting accessibility and like getting accommodations, things like that. So that's what we kind of settle on. So I'm the professional development chair and that's what we have. That's where we find the chair and she's great. She's like now one of my good friends. She's awesome. But then we find someone else, a senior manager says that she wants to help out with us. And then we say, hey, we're looking for a co-chair, you know? She's like, I don't know if I can do that, but she wants to be a communications chair. Great. Got a communications chair. And then we end up finding someone who's the co-chair, who's like, we're one of both of me and the chair's good friend too. So like, he's the co-chair now. So we kind of built a whole team for the Ability Awareness Association that we're trying to get established. And we have a pretty good following. And it's been awesome. It's been fantastic. You know, just like recently, someone who was like on the ETSS floor, she had a pretty big accident and she's, you know, dealing with stuff. And she's back in the office finally, like last week. And I just like stopped by her office and I said, hey, so like, I know you don't want to know me that well, but I want you to know that like, if you need anything, I'm the founder of the Ability Awareness Association. Like, and my job is to make sure that you get resources so that you can be effective. So if you need anything, please reach out. And she's like, yeah, you know,
that's huge.
The brain fog, you know, accident, you know, she has this whole brain fog thing. I'm like, I get that. I had a stroke 4 years ago. Like, I remember that very much, but I want you to know that we're here for you if you need anything and we will advocate for you. You know, it's like, that's, I get sweet to do that now, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, most people who've reached out with interest about what I'm doing are actually people who just are on the neurodiversity scale, you know, people with ADHD at work who can't focus. That we cover that too, because it's not, you don't have to have like a visible disability. My disabilities are very much invisible, you know, cognitive impairments, hard of hearing. Like, if you looked at me, you wouldn't peg me as a disabled person, but I am, and it does very much impact me at work. But it's like, how do I navigate that and then now advocate for others, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been really cool. It's actually super awesome. I've gotten involved with so we just had our DE&I expo at the end of October, and I got pretty involved. It was serendipitous how this happened. We BEAAA, we had our first big event at the dog bar in OKC. It's Bark. It's a bar, but it also is like a dog park. Super cool. And we were there, and then who we run into is the executive director for Not Your Average Joe, which is an organization in Oklahoma City who advocates for inclusion of people of all abilities. So they're a coffee shop that literally employs, it's like a one-to-one ratio, like someone with a disability and someone, I don't even want to say someone with a disability, someone with a different kind of ability, and with like a fully able person is actually kind of a mentorship, and they become really, you know, find a love and a passion in employment opportunities because people just don't employ people with the same disabilities, you know?
Yeah.
And fun fact, actually employers who employ people with disabilities, their companies actually do better. Like gross profit, they do better. That's statistically proven by those inclusive policies. And that's what got talked about. So we just had the expo and I brought him out and he got to do this incredible presentation. Like, so I almost cried multiple times in it because it's like, wow, your story of the organization. And he was talking about how like their face of it, you know, for many years of Not Your Average Joe was someone who was like fully blind, fully deaf. And he was just like the light of the room. He's like making like coffee art while he's fully blind and fully deaf. He's great, you know.
Amazing.
A big wake up call when he was struck by a car and killed about a year ago. Cross on the street, but it's insane. But yeah, so that was really moving to have him. And then for the Pride Alliance, I brought out my PCP and go to Diversity Family Health in Oklahoma City, which is a clinic for, they kind of specialize in LGBTQ healthcare, And he talked about kind of the foundation of that and how a lot of times, like, queer people just don't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Because you experience harassment on account of your sexuality or gender identity. Yeah. You don't even go
I can't
there.
Imagine what it's like in Oklahoma either, too. Like, it's not, it doesn't seem like it's the most progressive state.
Nope, not at all. So he talked about, like, people would literally die of, like, diabetes or just, like, random, like, not even, like, critical things because they don't go to the doctor for basic stuff because they feel not safe. So he's created a clinic where it actually is fully inclusive, very affirming. It's awesome. It was a great talk. And, you know, I love it. So my coworker reached out to me she emailed me and she's like, I'm so happy about that Russell came out to speak to us. And I went home to talk to my husband and he's like, what'd you do at work today? She's like, it was great. I got to learn about anal intercourse for the first time.
Dude, that is,
she was like, this is great. We're like breaking down barriers. But I mean, yeah, of course, you know, you're not going to have a conversation about a queer clinic without that conversation.
Well, what do you want to do in like the next few years with that new responsibility? Like what are your like long-term goals in a perfect world?
Pride Association?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's only a two-year commitment. So technically I only have it for another year, but I mean, it's been awesome. Let me tell you some of the perks of being this as well. So I got to travel, you know, so I got to attend Out and Equal, the biggest LGBTQ business conference in the world. It was in Florida this year. And I got to go there. It's September, and I got to be there with all the other top like leaders in the Pride Association at Boeing, and just networking, connecting with like senior managers, the CHRO, the chief HR officer of Boeing Commercial. Like I was like with him, talking with him, and it was great. And I got to, they're doing like a panel, like an open discussion with like vice president of all DE&I at Boeing, and with the chief HR officer and like another vice president too. And like, they're asking about questions like, where have you experienced like harassment on account of your LGBTQ identity? I'm like, well, actually I don't experience any on account of my LGBTQ-ness, but on my disabledness, absolutely. And I got to talk about that.
That's straight wild. To
the top, like the top, like the CHRO of Boeing Commercial, like tell him. And like, he later reached out to me on like LinkedIn, like I wanted to connect with him and, you know, basically promote, because the thing is, all the harassment I've experienced is from a lack of education. Like people just don't know there are certain things that you can't say to someone because they don't even realize that's wrong. So I want to come up with like, how do we more educate properly to have an inclusive environment? And this whole time it was funny because Boeing just got rated like 100% rating for ability inclusion. I'm like, yeah, about that, you know. Anyways, I don't. But yeah, no, it was a really good conference. I learned a lot of stuff for like a business and like navigating the business world as a queer identifying person, which was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And then just like, so we went to the Dominican Republic, which is a blast. And then like the week after that, I went to Anaheim, California for the last conference. So OSTEM is out in STEM with science, technology, engineering, math, and out. And I was a finalist for two national awards because a senior manager at Boeing, she kind of pushed me to apply for them. And so it was for the person of the year and the network of the year. So person of the year for just being the person of the year and network of the year for the organization that I run at Boeing OKC. And so Boeing, the Boeing Pride Alliance as a whole has won that multiple times, or once or twice. Never have they nominated a chapter. And so when I was talking with OSTEM is interesting at Boeing because we don't have like specific chapters. We have like one point person for the whole company. And she's saying that's actually a unique strategic move, is actually nominating a specific chapter. And especially coming from, you know, Oklahoma, like a very anti-LGBTQ plus state with like legislation trying to outlaw drag shows and other things. We actually made illegal for people under the age of 26 to have gender affirming care, like reassignment, anything like that. Literally like adults who cannot have gender affirming care. And that got called out, actually, out on Equal. Laverne Cox, who is from a lot of things. She's the trans woman in Orange Is the New Black. She said there's certain states that are passing anti-trans laws for like adults.
I have seen that.
But so I was a finalist for Those Two Things, and specifically she wanted to point to what I'd done with the organization in Oklahoma City, kind of going back to what I talked about CSU earlier, the organization that supports youth who are experiencing homelessness in Oklahoma City, in our city, and 54% of them are queer identifying. So I've brought my, I personally volunteer with them like much at the beginning of this year until like I started classes like at Oklahoma City Community College just to practice before I go back to grad school, which I'll talk about in a second. So I just personally volunteered there a bit. And then when suddenly I couldn't, I started creating events for my organization to go out there and volunteer. And they loved it, you know. And they actually, we just helped them. When I was at the conference, we helped them move, relocate buildings across the street to their own new facility. They were at the basement of a church for forever. You know, now they have their own space. But it's great. And they love volunteering there and like making a difference. And the great thing about volunteering with Boeing is we pay them. They get paid like $15 or $20 a person per hour, you know? So it's not bad. They get a pretty nice donation.
So it sounds like you're able to like make some really cool differences within Boeing and then apply that to your community and just kind of outside.
Exactly. Well, that's actually how Boeing at OSIM, we did win the one award that we won at Boeing, is we won like the company, the like community outreach, or like, I can't remember the exact nomination, but basically we won the award for like going out to the communities and making a difference as a company.
That's sick.
Boeing won that, you know?
That's sweet.
And me doing what we did helped that. Now it was incorporated into the nomination. It was actually for what happened in Florida. It was like the organization of Florida that did some stuff for the community too, which is fine, you know, but that's like what we get to do as a company. I love that I'm part of a company that does care about our communities, that actually does reach out and do things, you know.
It's not just a commercial on, you know.
No, we're actually at the Super Bowl. Aggressive.
It's actually something really sweet. Yeah. Well, isn't Boeing headquartered here, or isn't there like a major hub here? I could swear there's like a giant.
You mean in Portland?
Yeah.
We do have a location in Portland.
There's a giant factory here or something.
Seattle. So, so in Seattle, Boeing, a commercial is headquartered in Seattle.
That's what I'm saying.
And so defense is headquartered in, I think Arlington, Virginia, but commercial is headquartered in Seattle. It's actually the biggest building in the entire world is the Boeing like hangar.
All
the aircrafts.
It's wild.
I have friends who work there, you know?
That's wild.
So that's in Seattle.
I didn't know what that was. I just was thinking, I'm like, I wonder if it's because they're in Seattle, it's like in the Northwest, that they're a little bit more progressive, because a lot of companies here are pretty progressive.
There's like multiple different like Boeing. There's multiple Boeing locations in Seattle, but anyway, so that's the Boeing stuff.
Let's do last few minutes here and talk a little bit about you're going back to grad school, and then we can wrap it up.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. So you know, so I've been trying to keep up with music stuff, and it's actually pretty hard. I actually haven't written anything. The last piece I wrote was like the summer after I did my last call, which is pretty cool, but I've been trying to, it's a practice. You fall out of practice, you know. Mm-hmm. But I haven't been composing as much, but actually Tyson kind of pushed me to get more cello stuff, you know, because I really had it like, I can't play the cello anymore. Because I'm half deaf, you know, play out of tune and you can't hear. So, but I actually did go to work on that. And then I did end up starting with a teacher, working on it. And she actually was so interested because I'm like a case study of like, how do you teach someone who can't hear, you know? And then, so I did end up actually joining an orchestra last year, which is awesome. I was the principal cellist of that one. I'm like, here I am, I'm deaf and I'm the principal cellist, you know?
That's wild. That's some Beethoven shit.
It was really fun. It wasn't a very hard music, you know, but it was just cool being a part of a group like that again. And then recently, actually, like two Tuesdays ago, I had my second concert, different orchestra. It's the community orchestra that meets at OU. So I got to perform on the OU stage again. I never thought I'd be able to do that.
So cool.
Here I am like 4 years later and I'm performing on that stage. Now, given I was like last year, but like still,
hey, you did it.
I'm still playing with it. We're playing on there. Yeah. Hard music and like I'm faking all of it. And like I still did it and it was awesome. But I'm not going to grad school for music, obviously, but I am at the same time. So I said earlier, like my dream is to be an acoustic engineer. And the reason that is because it's like, I have a degree in music, I have a degree in engineering. I was really good at both. I won the national competition for a composition like in 2018. So it's like music is still a huge part of my life. And like, I want to be able to still do that. You know, I want to be able to create the experience for others that I can't have. But that being said, I acoustic engineering, that's not sound, it's all math.
Yeah, all sound waves.
It's sound waves.
Which
sound
can be interpreted with math, yeah.
Oh, differential equations. God, I have to learn that again. So I did. I applied for a couple of different grad schools. But before that, I'm just taking classes at OCCC. And, you know, I'm taking a materials manufacturing processes class, which I have the book right here. And I've taken it before. I have taken that before. And I'm thinking, like, this is the weak area. And this class I blew off in my undergrad. I'm going to get better at it now. And, oh, my God, the class is really hard now. I'm like, I have taken this class before. This sucks. But I pointed out to the professor how he's covering completely different material than we did, though. He's like, I know. He was really proud of it.
Dude. Yeah.
So I'm taking that and then also a CATIA class, like a class on the software that I'm bad at Boeing. I'm like, okay, cool. So that's been okay. I'm navigating the semester right now, all in preparation for grad school. That being said, I got into the number 6 program in the U.S. for online engineering and leadership management, and got into the number 1 program at Purdue.
Hell yeah.
Number 1 program in the U.S. for engineering and leadership management online, and Purdue is the number 1 school in the world for acoustic engineering.
Boom, bro. You were going to the Harvard of acoustic engineering.
Correct.
Sick. And you're going to the Purdue of acoustic engineering.
You're going to the Purdue. It's super cool. I'm super excited. And
that is awesome, dude.
The coolest thing is it's also a dual degree program. So like once I'm done at Purdue, 30 credits transfer to Indiana for the MBA, which is also like Indiana's been in a school is like really good. So
dude,
I'm a little terrified.
No, don't be. You're going to crush it.
Failing the class I've taken before already. Whatever.
Hey,
I'm saying I'm like Asian failing it.
You'll find a way. You're going to do great.
Best part is Boeing's paying for all of it if I don't fail. So.
Yeah, dude. That's killer.
Yeah, I'm not paying anything for the classes I'm in.
That's awesome. Damn. I love that. A
lot of good stuff has happened since we last talked.
Yeah. So. Not the top of the list, but towards the top of the list, going to Bizzler twice.
Sure. It was really fun.
Dude, it was so fun. Yeah.
That was like, not the scars. So yeah. I guess it's just like I was drunk on the catamaran and I chest bumped like a coral reef or something. So I just
That's like, what you did.
It's filling up now, so I'm not going to show my chest on camera, but.
Wouldn't be the first time. I'm just kidding. I don't think anybody's turned their chest. No. I think we might have had a shirtless person on here before. It gets wild in the Ponytails podcast sometimes.
Oh, no, I'm
scared. Man, that's so cool.
Yeah.
A lot of really cool stuff happening.
Just have a memorabilia from that trip,
hey, I guess. It's something to remember it by. No. On a serious note, I'm really proud of you. That's so cool that how things have changed. And like it just seems that things are, you know, you're able to take advantage of the things that you care about with where you're working. And sometimes it sucks. It sounds like, but at the same time, it sounds like you're getting a lot of cool ways to expand and get a platform for the things that you believe in. That's sweet. That's a cool place to be. Dang, man. That's so cool. Brother, this has been a blast.
Yeah. Thank you.
No. Hey, thanks for coming back. I was excited because, you know, we had another episode in the morning when we were scheduled a week ago, but they had to reschedule for next week instead. But I still had two on a Monday, which was, it was the two Conroys. So yep. This has been a Conroy day for me.
There you go.
Legendary.
Got 3.
That is so fun, man. Oh, sweet brother. Okay, well, a couple things. One, congratulations. Two, if anybody listening wants to get a hold of Anthony, wants to ask him some questions, maybe you sold in the same time frame, you're like, holy cow, what the heck's Anthony doing now? I want to catch more, a little bit more about his life. Just let us know, message us. We can put you in touch with him, assuming he's okay with it. I'm not going to just throw your stuff
out. That's all fun.
Man, that's so awesome. Wow. Well, I'm gonna wrap this one up here because I was gonna say
you can reach out. Are you gonna say how they can reach out or not? Or
yeah, how would you prefer people reach out if they want to say hi? Don't give your number out. We do like an email. We could drop your email in the show description.
Email's fine. You can go to my website.
Okay. Want. Yeah. All right.
So that way they have to like navigate through my music.
There you go. Yeah. What's your website?
You can reach out to me on that too. So it's just AnthonyConroy.com.
AnthonyConroy.com.
That's one way to do it. It's pretty easy. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me on Facebook if you want. You know,
AnthonyConroy.com. Boom. I'm going to put it right there. And then we're also going to put it like that.
Yeah.
And then we'll put it on the show description too, so people can just tap on those links and then they can come find you.
Cool.
Dude, hell yeah, man. Well, hey guys, this has been another episode of the Ponytails Podcast. By the way, go check out our Patreon. Support us. It's like $5. Stop drinking coffee for one day. That's less than one Starbucks drink a month. You can do it. I believe in you. Come help us out. We're trying to get away from the advertising and trying to make it so it's more of a community built and being able to have people reach out to us, connect with us, and invest with us. So that'd be great. My name is Andres Gamboa. We'll catch you guys on the next episode of the Ponytails Podcast. Peace out, everybody. Come to Bizzler. Anthony and I will be there. It's a thing. It's really fun. It's two for two so far. We're two for two. It's
incredible. Two for two. We'll see how it goes in grad school. Yeah. No promises.
You know, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, guys. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye-bye, everybody.